Good afternoon. I'm Tom Lutz, sitting in today for Ian Masters, a background briefing with Ian Masters, and actually today background briefing without Ian Masters. I'm the editor of Los Angeles Review of Books and a professor at the University of California, Riverside. Ian is taking a few days off for the first time, as I understand it, for in many years. Is that right? So I'm acting as guest host, a kind of Joan Rivers to his Johnny Carson. I'll try not to work too blue, as they say, keep the bleeps to a minimum, although it will be difficult, as we'll be talking about some very dreadful situations. When Ian asked me to step in, I wanted to do a show about some places and issues that are not always not often in the news. And I have three guests today. In the last part of the show, we'll be talking with Michael Dunham about the situation in Tibet and the Tibetan refugee camps in Nepal. Today is the Dalai Lama's birthday, and thus traditionally a day of celebration, a holy day among Tibetans. And those celebrations have been widely and in some cases brutally suppressed in both Tibet and Nepal. The Dalai Lama gave a major speech this morning in Washington, D.C. And Michael, who has spent a lot of time in the region and written about it extensively, will give us a report. Before Michael, however, we'll talk with Ben Ehrenreich, who has recently returned from the West Bank, where he was reporting on water issues for Harper's Magazine. We'll talk about those issues, but also about I guess it's almost too obvious to say it, the very complex political situation there. Since Ben was there, as the Arab Spring rippled across the region, he has some very interesting observations to share with us. And first, but not least, we have Adam Summers, who is executive director of PEN USA, and he'll be telling us a bit about PEN and its activities. And in the interest of full disclosure, I have myself been somewhat active in PEN for some years now. But we'll be talking primarily about Ethiopia, and because of PEN's mission, we'll be talking mostly about the problems journalists are and have been facing there. Today, a number of news services are reporting on what the Associated Press has called the Triangle of Hunger at the borders of Ethiopia, Somalia, and Kenya, where drought has killed thousands and where refugee camps now house almost 400,000 people. Closely related to those developments, 2 days ago, Ethiopian troops killed 15 soldiers of the Ogaden National Liberation Front and two Swedish journalists, freelance journalists, who were covering the ongoing war and were with the ONLF, were arrested by government forces. And as Adam will tell us shortly, they are far from the first journalists to be taken into custody. It's a practice that has become a kind of governmental reflex. I'm now joined by Adam Summers. Adam spent some 30 years in the music business, notably at Warner Brothers Records, at Neil Young's Vapor Records, and as head of new media at DreamWorks Records. But since 2004, he's had the much more interesting and important job as executive director of PEN Center USA, which I'll be calling, after common usage, PEN USA. Welcome to Background Briefing, Adam Summers.
Welcome, Tom.
Many listeners, I'm sure, are aware of PEN USA, but give us a quick description of the organization, and then I'll ask a few questions about Ethiopia and your organization's efforts, I guess our organization's efforts on behalf of Ethiopian journalists.
Okay, there are 144 PEN centers around the world, and in particular, two in the United States. American PEN, which is housed in Manhattan and is probably more well-known than our center here on the West Coast, although next year will be the 70th anniversary of this center's operation, starting in Los Angeles in particular and then spreading out through the western states. And all PEN centers in the world, to a greater or lesser degree, are involved with two tracks of programming: freedom to write, which is what PEN centers are usually best known for, characterizes helping to get imprisoned writers, imprisoned for their writing, that is, out of jail or out from under persecution around the world. And then in America, defense of the First Amendment, anti-censorship, shield laws for journalists, things like that. So that's basically the other track I should mention is supporting the literary community. So there's readings. We have PEN in the Classroom, Emerging Voices, number of other programs that are involved in the literary side of it as opposed to the human rights side of it.
And the literary side of it in a not necessarily just literary salon and discussion, but in terms of and Penn in the Classroom and Emerging Voices are both programs for teaching writing.
Well, yes. I mean, the actually Penn in the Classroom and Emerging Voices, when we actually talk about them, we consider them to be under the heading of freedom to write, because in the case of the Penn in the Classroom program, which is a 12-week residency in high schools, the idea is for students who might not otherwise have the opportunity to identify that they have a voice, get a chance to explore that, and the residency ends with a published anthology and a public reading. So there's a whole empowering series of events that go down. And then Emerging Voices, I won't bore you with the whole history, but the idea is there were segments of the population in Los Angeles and other parts of the United States where various groups, whether it was gender-based or sexual orientation or the immigrant experience, were cut off from mainstream publishing. And so we've created this program now in its 15th year and diversified out to include men as well as women. It was originally a women-only program, so that there are people who can, you know, get a pathway to mainstream publishing, hopefully. And we have, over the past 15 years, you know, we've got like, you know, three or four dozen novels published, hundreds of articles, anthologized pieces. It's a very successful program. 115 people have gone through it, so it's relatively small. So we're very proud of the publishing record and, you know, think it's impressive vis-a-vis the size of the number of people that have gone through.
Yeah, fantastic. Let's in relation to Ethiopia, let's start back a few years. In 2002, Penn USA gave its annual Freedom to Write Award. It's an award that you've been giving for quite some time.
20 years.
You gave the Freedom to Write Award to a group called the Ethiopian Free Press Journalists Association.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about who they are and the events that transpired around that award.
Well, I if you don't mind, I'll back up just a little bit more than that.
Okay.
long before I arrived at this Penn Center, there was a gentleman named Larry Seams, who was in charge of Freedom to Write for this center, who is now the head of Freedom to Write at American Penn, and in my humble judgment, probably the best guy doing what we do in the world today, and somebody who I collaborate with all the time and who I'm have a great deal of respect for. And some of Larry's initial work had to do with helping to get Nigerian journalists who are under pressure out of the country and into safe haven and providing support and advocating through the Penn International Penn system on behalf of those writers' individuals' cases and imprisonments and persecutions. And then things sort of settled out there. There was also the Ken Saro-Wiwa issue, the work that was done by our center and International Penn and other centers around the world to go after Shell's, you know, I don't know what the word would be, but the spoiling of the Nigerian, the Ogoni tribe's lands, the brutalization of the countryside and the people in pursuit of oil. And then all that sort of settled down. The Nigerian, there was an election and a more democratic group of people came in and there was more press freedom and all that pressure was taken off. Then which brings you, and we were also involved in establishing a Penn Center in Sierra Leone right after that civil war and helped rebuild some of the literary culture and freedom to write aspects there. And then in 1994, Elias Wandamu, who's on our board, was forced to leave Ethiopia for his political views and started being involved with Penn here and helped work on the Nigerian things. And then you come to the situation in the early part of 2000 where the Ethiopian Free Journalists Association, or Free Press Journalists, I call it a different name, start to feel the pressure. And so there's some advocacy that takes place. And because of the formation of that group and the work that they were doing to be a loyal opposition and write what they felt was the truth, they received this award. And Kifle Mulat, who was the president, came to America and accepted the Freedom to Write International Award at that time.
This is Tom Lutz. I'm sitting in for Ian Masters on Background Briefing. And I'm speaking with Adam Summers, executive director of Penn USA. And this last year, Ethiopia, we should say, for people who don't know, right, is run by Meles Zenawi, who's part of the force that overthrew Mengistu, who was one of the top 10 nasty dictators in the last 100 years, which is a tough club to get into. Zenawi has been being reelected by phony majorities for quite some time. And Mengistu is a guest of Robert Mugabe's, right? And so this, the problems with journalists being arrested are widespread, constant. And just this last year, PenUSA gave its Freedom to Write Award to another Ethiopian journalist.
Yes, Cisse Agena received the award last November. We were hoping that he would be able to travel to America and receive the award in person, but there were some complications with the visa, which we subsequently were able to overcome in January of this year. And he has traveled to America and is here, and we're hoping to put together a ceremony to give him, actually physically give him the award, and there's a stipend that goes with it that could be helpful. And also, kind of as a retrospective of our work in Ethiopia, we were hoping to bring in Kifle Mulat, who's now relocated to Houston, Texas, and another gentleman named Daniel Gazahenge. I'm killing his last name, but I apologize, but who is somebody we helped originally in Yemen, and then he emigrated in, he's in Atlanta, Georgia. And these are people who I hadn't really thought of it in this way, but Elias, who's on our board, and I were talking about this, and he pointed out that in the case of Daniel, who we helped in Yemen, who was suffering from some diabetic problems, that had we not helped him with the medical care, he would be blind now. And had he not emigrated to America, he'd be dead now, as would probably Kifle and Cisse. So we're just kind of like, it kind of shocked us when we were talking about it, that we actually have done some things that turned out to be, you know, crucial in certain people's lives. And so that's kind of where we've come to at this moment.
Yeah, and not just in Ethiopia, but in many countries around the world. It's right. It's a PenUSA.org, we should say.
Yes, that's the website.
That's the website. And then very recently, I mentioned the two journalists that were arrested in the last couple of days. Hillary Clinton was just in town in Addis Ababa, right?
There's a confluence of events in Addis Ababa that is actually absolutely mind-bending. And I may mess up the chronology here, but it's within days or weeks of each other. And what you have happening is Hillary Clinton, you know, speaking in Addis Ababa and saying what a great guy the leader of the country is and what a good job they're doing. And you then in June 13th to 17th, there was a meeting of a working group to come up with a proposal for media freedom in South Africa to be presented at the African Union meeting that's coming up in September. And as these things are going on within days, the government is declaring under a terrorism act that they passed that a number of groups are terrorist groups and starts arresting all these people. And some of these, this one particular group called Ginbot 7 contains a lot of journalists and is really just the political opposition. And they just scoop them up and they're in jail. And so who knows what's going to happen to them. Over the last 10 years, 120 journalists have fled Ethiopia at risk of losing their lives.
The Ethiopian Free Press Association? Journalists Association was actually founded in Amsterdam or somewhere, right? Out of the country.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know that. I don't know that.
By people who had already fled the repression. Hillary Clinton's part in this is?
I guess it's more important to have someone to contain Somalia than it is to have freedom of press or freedom of speech. I mean, we may be overly simplistic, but for the Pen people, I think around the world, you know, freedom of expression trumps all, and it's the basis for how you have a free society and citizens operating in that way. So, you know, we understand the realities of geopolitical things, but, you know, the group that took over, the people that took over in 2005, if I have this correctly, you know, there was an election that put in a very democratic parliament, and as those people were seated, they just arrested all those people and seized power. I mean, it was looking like it was going to be a sunny spring, and then it's winter, and it's been that way ever since.
There was a great celebration after that election.
Exactly. And crushed. Yeah. So all these people are, I mean, the fact that these, I mean, Cisse, who we gave the award to, you know, spent, you know, a couple of stints in prison, 2, 3 years, 5 years at a time. And, you know, it's amazing that these writers hang in there and keep going up against this government that is just brutal in repressing them.
Now, I know that you can't talk too much about Cisse Agena and what's happening with him now, but he is. You helped him get out of the country.
We absolutely did.
And we're hoping that at some point he will be able to come forward and collect his award.
Yes, and I think I'm positive that's going to happen maybe in the next month or so. And when that does happen, we are going to have a celebration and an award ceremony in Little Ethiopia in one of the restaurants where we've done this before. And I'm probably going to bring Kifle and Danielle in from Houston and Atlanta and reunite this group and kind of just kind of marvel at the fact that this whole group of people has, you know, we've been able to help out.
In the long run, these journalists would, I assume, like to go back to Ethiopia and resume their jobs and do the work that they've spent their lives trying to do within this system.
Absolutely. I believe that all these Ethiopian writers, in fact, maybe a huge part of the expatriate Ethiopian diaspora would like to return to Ethiopia if the conditions. I mean, we have done some events with the Ethiopians and we're surprised that the issues that are confronting, you know, generation 1.5, 2.0 and all that sort of thing in other cultures is a matter of assimilation or not assimilating or, you know. From what I gather from hearing them speak about it, is there's no assimilation. They may have in fact assimilated, but the idea is that when conditions are right, they're all going to sell their homes, and you know whether that actually happens, I don't know. But that's the mindset: is that no, they're going back. You know,
and this is very much a Los Angeles story, right? I mean, there are the two main Ethiopian communities are
Washington D.C. and
Los Angeles.
Huge, yeah. Huge. I mean, you know, just for Penn, just to give you a little anecdote, when I first became the executive director, an issue came up of an Ethiopian journalist who was in prison and being held for bond and that he could be bailed out. And one of the first things I ever did as kind of a cross-cultural event was take a certain amount of money, which was not a very large amount of money in terms of American terms, a few hundred dollars in cash, and our offices were in the mid-district by Lafayette Park Place, and walk across Wilshire by Ramparts to this Korean grocery and have this young Korean boy with a purple mohawk type in the Western Union and send the money to Otis. And then we send a, you know, keyword and a secret code or something like that. And this guy, you know, was popped out of jail. Mm. And it was hard to wrap your head around. Like, that's it? I go to the Western Union window, and there's this funny teenage kid there, and I push the money through, and he pushes out a receipt, and we send an email, and that's it. And he's out of jail on the other side of the world. And I think Elias's point on that when talking about it is that you just do them one at a time. You just do them as they come. What's put in front of your face, you do what you can, and hope
yeah.
It works out.
It's a wonderful program. I've always been very proud to be a small part of it, and you're doing a fantastic job at it. The stories are not always simple success stories, right? That is, these are in some cases people who are who have been tortured, have been beaten, have been when we manage to get them out, they're a bit of a mess, and it's not always just a happy story.
That is absolutely true. I mean, this, without mentioning a certain person, because I don't want to put him at any risk, but there's somebody who we, in all good faith, you know, helped bring into America. There were a number of other organizations, Amnesty, Human Rights Watch, a number of other, and plus American Pen, we collaborated. And somebody arrived here, and we're all excited that they're here, but getting them here is really just the first step, and we're kind of learning to temper some of our enthusiasm and making better choices, because what they require when they get here is not always something that we are in a position, either professionally or financially, to provide them. And it has kind of tempered things a little bit. I mean, I think given the opportunity to help someone escape for their life, we would do it. But there's a lot more that we need to develop and have available for these people. And there's no question that a number of these people come out have been horribly tortured. I mean, we then help them get some kind of psychiatric help, and see an incredible improvement, and then they'll fall away from that therapy and you see them fall apart, and there's a kind of a cycle that develops. But, you know, I'm not a therapist and I'm not a caseworker. I've got this organization to run, but somewhere down the line I'm hoping that we'll be able to put together a program that will be able to provide those facilities as an extension of merely helping them arrive in America.
Well, thank you so much, Adam. I've been speaking with Adam Summers, who's the executive director of Penn Center USA, an organization of playwrights, essayists, novelists, and other writers, which works to protect the rights of writers worldwide. In a moment, we'll continue with Ben Ehrenreich on developments in the West Bank and Michael Dunham on the dire straits of Tibetans in Tibet and Nepal today on the Dalai Lama's birthday. But I want to thank you again. I've been speaking with Adam Summers, Executive Director of Penn USA. Thank you, Adam.
Thank you, Tom, for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
We'll be back in a moment.